Some of us get out of the military thinking that the hardest part is over. But then real life hits. There's silence, the lack of direction, the nights you can't sleep, and the days that feel just as heavy. And you're trying to stay sharp, trying to show up for your family, but deep down you know that you're struggling to keep it all together. And Chris Smith gets it, our guest today. His path after the service didn't follow a clean line. There's PTSD, homelessness, and a long stretch of feeling like he didn't belong anywhere. What pulled him back wasn't just getting help. It was movement, it was structure, and it was showing up for others. This episode is going to talk about rebuilding from the inside out, talking about how Warrior Strong creates space for veterans to connect through yoga, fitness, and shared experiences, camaraderie. Whether you're sweating through a class together or just learning how to breathe again through meditation and other practices like that. Before we get into that episode, though, I also want to take a moment to raise awareness for something deeply important to our community, the Global War on Terrorism Memorial Foundation. This organization is working to build a permanent national memorial in Washington, D.C. to honor the service members, families, and civilians impacted by the Global War on Terrorism. This memorial serves as both a tribute to those who served and a way to ensure their sacrifices are recognized and remembered for generations to come. If you would like to learn more or find out how you can support the mission, visit gwattmemorialfoundation.org. Now let's get into today's episode. Hey, Chris, welcome to the show. I'm really glad to have you here, and I'm really excited to get into the work that you're doing with Warrior Strong and all the cool stuff that you guys are doing. I know we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before, but it's just a great organization. I wanted to have you on and share a little bit more about what you guys are doing.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you for having me on. We've been trying to find different ways to kind of get our message out there, and this is a really great opportunity. So I know I really appreciate it, and I know Tom does as well.
Well, and I appreciate the work that you guys are doing. I know you're helping out a lot of people out there. But before we get into that type of stuff, just for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your military background, and you know how that experience shaped your approach to what you're doing today?
Yeah. So my name is Christopher Smith, Program Director for Warrior Strong. I joined the Army pretty much junior year of high school, and deferred entry until I graduated. And my third day in basic was September 11th. Oof. Yeah. So we are told that, we are going to be going overseas right away. We got a bunch of extra training. And then when we got to the end of basic, they're like, oh, just kidding. You're going to go to AIT. So from there, I was in the Corps of Engineers. I did 8 years and two tours for almost 2.5 years. It was a transformative experience for me just because even though I was part of a military family, I wasn't prepared for what the military was going to be. I'd heard stuff from my stepdad and my dad because they were both military, but I wasn't quite prepared for what the reality of being in the Army was. So it was kind of an eye opener. It was an experience because both my dad and my stepdad were both Navy. My grandfather was a Marine. My uncle was a Marine. So I grew up hearing all the stories about the Navy and hanging around like different E's because my stepdad was a flight engineer on P-3 Orions. So I grew up in that kind of world. So I was expecting kind of similar thing in the military or in the Army, I'm sorry. And it was not the case. They always talked about how much the swim qualification sucked when they had to go do that. So I was expecting to do that and instead spend most of my time dragging my face through gravel and dirt and mud. So not quite what I was expecting, but it was, sure every veteran you speak to can have a similar story to this, or not experience rather. It sucked while I was in, but there's certain parts that I miss. But there's other parts that I can do without, especially when I joined, we still had to polish our boots. And even though I still do that, I still polish my shoes, especially dress shoes, because I find it kind of zen-like. I don't want to have to do it when I'm told to. So,
right. Yeah. It's funny how it's like one of those things where you're told to do something, and I don't know, sometimes it's like, no, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to rebel against whatever the thing is that you're being told to do. But, you know, when you have the idea to do it yourself, it seems like a great idea. And like you said, in that case, it's like a zen-like experience. And there's other things too that I'm sure people can relate to. Maybe it's not polishing boots, but maybe it's, you know, the way they hang their clothes in their closet or something like that. It's just, you know, certain things, or the way they make their bed or whatever, could just be that cathartic thing for them that just stuck with them. I know I posted a video on Instagram a few months ago, and it's gotten just a tremendous amount of views. Just people keep commenting on it and everything. But it's basically drill sergeants in the chow hall yelling at the recruits to, you know, hurry up and eat, and, you know, sidestep through the line, and you know, hold your tray a certain way. And it's just constant chaos. And so many people are commenting, I still eat, in, you know, my whole meal in like 2 minutes. And, you know, it's just a thing that's stuck with you, you know. That may be not such a healthy thing, but it's just a thing that sticks with you, you know.
Oh, yeah. I get frustrated, like, when dinner is ready. And my wife will be taking a little while. I'm like, listen, dinner's ready. It's time to eat, bro. You know, sit down.
I'm usually the one in my family that's done first. And then everyone else is still, it looks like they just started. And I'm sitting there like, okay, well, hey, if we're going to sit here, let's have a conversation. They all have like food in their mouth. So it's like, we just can't get the timing right, you know? It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about kind of your transition and how you got into doing what you're doing now, you know, leaving the military. And, you know, I know it must have been crazy, you know, being, you know, basically your first few days in the Army, 9/11 happens. Like that's a huge, I mean, that was a huge shift for everybody in the country. I can only imagine, you know, someone who is, you signed up in a time, you know, we were kind of in a peacetime environment, and then 3 days later, whoops, not anymore. That must have been a huge, huge transition. But then, you know, going throughout your time in the military, I'm sure there are like other things that you just weren't expecting, right?
Yeah. Let's speak a little bit more on like the basic aspect of it. I remember we had just gotten into do KP duty, right?
Okay.
From after the morning meal. And I remember I was in the back scrubbing pots and pans and sneaking French toast as they were bringing it back off the line, and bacon, because you know how that is.
Oh yeah.
And I'm scrubbing this big pot, and one of the drill sergeants comes in and he turns on the radio, and it's Rush Limbaugh, and he's like freaking out, and I'm thinking like, is he doing like a War of the Worlds kind of thing? Like, what is going on? Like, this, like, what he's saying isn't making sense to me. And everything just stopped. Everything stopped because he yelled. He was like, shut up. Listen, you pay attention to what's going on. And then next thing we knew, we were pulled off of KP duty. We were put into a room with a TV and we watched what was going on. And that's when they announced that, you know, we were getting special, you know, we're not special training, but we were getting extended training. We're going to go overseas. They swapped out all the drill sergeants that we had for new drill sergeants.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it was crazy. But, you know, when my first tour was in 2003 during the invasion of Iraq. And I was involuntarily transferred to a water supply and petroleum supply company. And it was kind of hectic. Because I had just gotten home and I had just started school. I had finished my first week of college, you know, like, all right, here I am, you know, going to learn how to do computer animation and web design. And I come home, there's a message on the answering machine and they're like, oh, Specialist Smith, you need to call us right now. And I'm like, there's no Specialist Smith here. This is PFC Smith. They can't be talking about me because I haven't got promoted. And so I call back and they tell me, you know, is this Specialist Smith? And I'm like, no, this is PFC Smith. And they're like, no, this is Specialist Smith. And I was arguing with them for a little bit. Like, no, you're a specialist now. You have to be down at this address tomorrow morning, all your gear. And I was kind of in shock. And then I'm packing all my stuff up and my parents come home and they were like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I really don't have any information to give you. I have to be in Philly tomorrow morning. I'll talk to you when I get there. Got everything packed up, had dinner with everybody, and then went down to Philly, of course. And then two weeks later, we were in front Fort Drum training with 10th Mountain. And I'll never understand why they sent us to Fort Drum to train for the desert. I'll never understand that. Because we got there, it was negative 20 degrees. And,
and it's not like we don't have desert here, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. And it's like, why? But I mean, after the training, I understood why. But it was just, it's crazy to think that at that age, right? How old was I? I was 20 years old when everybody else is kind of like getting ready on the weekends to go to like college parties or, you know, starting an entry level job or something like that. Yeah. That I was going to be in a totally different, not just country, but hemisphere of the world, in an area where I didn't know any of the societal norms or any of the language, and just kind of get dropped into these situations, you know, and then expect to do the job that I was trained to do with, you know, everything from bullets flying at you, explosions going off and popping up out of nowhere. And just thinking back on it now, like, it's really crazy to think about how one decision that you've made can totally alter and change the projection of your life just completely.
Yeah.
And not even know about it. Like, not even have an inkling of anything that's going to come after that or anything that's going to happen after that, after you've made that decision.
Right. And you probably didn't go into it thinking, hey, this is going to be a complete life-changing experience and, you know, everything's going to be different after this. But here you are. And
yeah,
that's what you had to deal with, right?
Yeah, no, I joined and I was like, okay, you know, I'll do a little bit of time in and then I'll go to college and, you know, get done and, you know,
and that's
be a little bit older than, right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Especially in that time.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was other stuff going on in the world, but not anything that would be construed as like wartime situation.
Mm-hmm.
There were like conflicts and peacekeeping missions and all this other kind of stuff going on, but nothing to that scale. I mean, outside of Afghanistan, of course.
Yeah, right.
But it's just crazy. And then when I finally separated after two tours, my ex-wife had moved to Scranton, Pennsylvania when I was deployed and came home and really didn't know anybody here. I mean, we were an hour and a half away from where our family was in Allentown in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And I mean, the only people that I really knew here were a couple of the guys that I got, because again, second tour, involuntarily transferred to another unit. And I knew a couple of the guys there, and to just leave and be in an area where I don't really know anybody, don't really have any job prospects, struggling with my marriage, hence, you know, having an ex-wife now.
Sure.
Yeah, but for years, a couple of years afterwards, struggling with PTSD, TBI, trying to get my life on track, I was not in the best of place. Mm-hmm. I was homeless for a period of time. To get out of that, thanks to my status as a veteran, I was able to apply for programs that would normally be available to a non-veteran. And after I, you know, got that aspect of my life back in order, I met a really amazing woman who's my wife now. And she encouraged me. She was like, hey, you have a GI Bill, right? I was like, well, yeah, I do. But I'm an engineer. I don't need to go to school. And she's like, listen, you have all this experience engineering, but nobody's hiring. And I was like, well, yeah, but somebody will at some point. And she was like, well, at some point doesn't help a kid. And I was like, you know what? You're right. So she encouraged me to go back to school. And I did. I went back and got my degree in nutrition and dietetics from Marywood University. And it was a great, it was a new experience. And once again, another thing that you do that you don't think is going to alter your trajectory, but it ultimately ended up doing that. While I was in school, I was the president of the Student Veteran Alliance for Marywood. And I had just joined because it was a veterans organization. Some of the people that were part of it, you know, they're friends of mine. We continue to talk to this day. And I was like, yeah, this should just be fun, something fun to do. And we had a really amazing director of military and veteran services there, Lauren Williams, and she kind of pushed me into that leadership role. Yeah, even though I left the military as the Army as a sergeant, I didn't really see myself as, you know, like a leader. Like I've led people, I've led missions, I've done that kind of thing, but like in the outside world, I didn't see myself as that. I just kind of saw myself as, you know, I'm Chris. I don't have to be Sergeant Smith anymore. He comes out from time to time, especially when I'm angry.
Yeah, I've noticed that too with Sergeant DeLuzio too.
yeah, exactly. And I was like, yeah, okay, you know, I'll do that. I'll run for the president. And we voted on it, and I had an amazing vice president and treasurer and secretary, and we ended up becoming nationally recognized by the Student Veterans of America. We were named Chapter of the Year in, I believe it was 2015, and they brought the award back because they had gotten rid of it 2 years because there wasn't any chapters that had actually, you know, been at the level.
Oh.
And yeah, and we did that by applying for a grant, the Home Depot Foundation. And we transformed one of the old student housing on campus into a veterans resource center. And from there, I kind of knew I wanted to stay in higher education for a little bit. So after I graduated, I took a job as a utility mechanic because, I mean, why not? I know how to use tools and do all the other stuff that you're required. So I did that until Director of Military and Veteran Services opened up. So I took that role at Marywood, and that's when I got introduced to Tom. Okay. I was looking for programming for my students, and we didn't really have a very big budget for programming. So I was looking for something that was free, and had been told by an organization here called Equines for Freedom that I should give this guy, Tom Tyson, a call. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. And I gave him a call, and he gave me a little bit of what he did. And I was like, okay, this is cool. You know, like, because at that time, Warrior Strong was doing yoga and Muay Thai. And I was like, well, if I can't get them interested in yoga, I can definitely get my butts interested in Muay Thai.
Sure.
And yeah. And then, because I was never like a yoga guy. I was always like, you know, I'll do push-ups, I'll do sit-ups, you know, I'll go lift some weights. But I'm not going to touch my toes.
Right. And likely probably couldn't at that point, right?
No. I think the closest I got was my shins, maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? What the hell? I'll give it a shot. And I took one yoga class with them. And I was like, oh, my God, this is way harder than I thought it was going to be. This requires a lot more effort than, you know, picking up heavy things and putting them back down. And so I really enjoyed it. And the part of the problem at that point was it was kind of hard to, because at that time, Warrior Strong was only teaching one class a week, or one class a month, I'm sorry. One to two, maybe. Like one class was yoga, one class was Muay Thai. And unfortunately, some of the times, there's a joke in the yoga community that a lot of yoga instructors like to flake because we're so in the moment.
Oh, okay.
That we get caught up in like doing something and forget we're supposed to be teaching a class. And I got frustrated because there's times where I really wanted to do yoga, but there was no class happening because the instructor had other obligations or I couldn't make it that day. So because I'm the type of person that if I see a problem and nobody else is doing anything to fix it, or there's an inability for other people to do it, I'll fix it. I'll figure out a way. So I went, I got my yoga certification, and we were, and then became part of Warrior Strong Fully, not just a member, but an instructor. And since then, it has been a really big part of my personal journey. I worked at Marywood for 2.5 years in the role of military and booking services. I got approached by the mayor of Scranton to come work for her. And I've always been big into politics, although I try to stay out of arguments with people, just because Sergeant Smith comes out when I get into those arguments.
Sure.
So I said, you know, yeah, let me give it a shot. So I went and worked with her for a little while. And then she asked me to go down and help out the Department of Public Works. So I went down there and I was a supervisor for the refuse and recycling department. And again, another thing that I was not prepared for, to think that it was going to change my life. Because I was like, what is like refuse and recycling? How hard is that? The trash guys go out, they pick up your trash and that's it. The logistics behind that is insane. It is there. Like I could talk to you for an entire program just about that. And it's one of those civics things that people don't think about, because trash gets picked up, it's no longer at your house. You really stop thinking about it, but there's like so much that goes into it. And there's a lot of politics that goes into trash too. It's crazy.
It's crazy to think that like something as simple as the stuff that you throw away, that you know, I throw stuff away. I put a can in the recycle bin or whatever. I don't ever think about that can ever again until like it's bring it down to the street and the truck takes it away. And like, I don't think about it. It's it's gone. It's garbage. It's out of my mind, out of my head. But then there's people out there who like, that's their job. And that's what they think about. And that's what they talk about and debate about. And, you know, what do we do with this and that? And there's a lot that goes into it, I suppose. And most people probably don't even know the half of it, right?
No, and it's crazy too, because the debates can get pretty fierce.
Yeah.
Because believe it or not, trash and recycling is money. It's a lot of money in it.
I'm sure.
But yeah, I mean, you tell one person that you're not going to pick up the recycling because they were in violation of city code and they lose their mind. like I said, I'm a big stickler, you know, for, you know, rules and regulations. And if like one of my trucks gets rejected because you put something in your recycling that the recycling company won't take, I'm going to tell you, listen, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. And if you want to argue with me, you can argue all you want, but at the end of the day, you're still not going to be able to do it.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, so you had a kind of interesting transition, not just through your military career, you know, starting in a pre-9/11 era, and then very quickly getting into that, being thrown in the deep end, let's just say, and everything that came along with it. But then, you know, also after getting out, dealing with homelessness and, you know, figuring out the GI Bill side of things, and you know, obviously you knew that you had some of these things available to you, but it wasn't your first go-to, right? Because you had an engineering background, you know, from the military. You know, what do you need to go to college for, right? That was kind of the mindset, I suppose, right? And then you kind of went in and it opened up some doors that maybe you didn't think were available to you. One question I did have as you were talking was that you said something about a program when you were homeless that helped you kind of get back on your feet and get back into that situation. What was that program and how did you know about it? Like, how did you come to know about this program? Or was it something that was told to you, like through a TAPS program or something like that? Or like what brought that to your attention?
So what ended up happening is there's a period of time where I got lucky and I was couch surfing.
Okay.
And, at one point, the couch surfing, the wave came to an end. And so I was living and sleeping in my car. And one night it was really cold and I couldn't do that. So I was like, well, you know what? The only option I have right now is to go to the homeless shelter.
Got it.
So I went to the homeless shelter and I was filling out, because you actually have to sign in and do all this other stuff. And I marked down that I was a veteran. And while I was talking to the guy at the homeless shelter, he was like, "You're a veteran, why are you here?" I was like, "What do you mean, why am I here?" He's like, "Well, there's a program right around the corner, you know, for veterans that are struggling with drug abuse and alcohol." And I was like, "Well, I'm not struggling with those. I mean, I had a couple of issues when I first came home with alcohol, managed to get that under control." And I was like, "But I'm not experiencing that." And he was like, "Well, listen, just go talk to them." And so I did. And it was Catholic Social Services here in our area in Scranton, got me in touch with what's called the St. James Manor, which I think now is St. Francis of Assisi. St. Francis Commons is what it's called now. But basically what it was a VA rent control program, and it was based off of a percentage of your income. At that time, I was working, part-time jobs, because it's really hard to apply for bigger jobs when you don't have a permanent address. And at that time, I was only had disability, but I was giving half of my disability check to my ex-wife for kids and stuff. And so I got really lucky, because at that time, my rent was only $200 a month.
Okay.
Which in our area now, if you found a place that was $200 a month, you're living in a cardboard box.
The price, housing price has just gone out of control lately. And that's absolutely right. Yeah. You wouldn't be able to find anything like that other than through a program like this, that you're talking about, you know, just not possible. So yeah, that is a good thing that, they pointed you in that direction to kind of help you get back on your feet, because like you said, without that permanent address, it's a little bit more difficult to apply for those full-time jobs and everything. So that's great. I wanted to talk about that too, because, you know, sometimes, again, you walked into that homeless shelter because it was cold, not because you were looking for permanent housing. The homeless shelter is not a permanent thing. I think everyone kind of knows that, right? But it's something that it's like, hey, I need to take the edge off of the cold that's outside and get a little warmed up here. That is, kind of what you're looking for. But when you're given that opportunity, you know, someone said, "Hey, why don't you go check out this program?" You know, that opened up another door that, again, you probably weren't expecting, but here it is. So, you know, I think that kind of theme of this so far, you know, from your story is, take those chances, let those doors open for you and see where it takes you. And, you know, a lot of times there's some good stuff on the other end, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's one of the things I try to teach in my yoga practices as well, right? Nothing ever stays the same.
Yeah.
Everything is always changing. Everything is constantly in flux. So what you might have projected for your life for the next 10 years, it can change in an instant, and you won't be expecting it. I try to teach people not to be attached to outcomes or to desires. It's really hard to learn. I still struggle with it. I still expect the world to be a certain way sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I try to teach veterans, because sometimes we can get caught up in being veterans, right? Like, that's our primary identifier. I'm a veteran. And then everything that you do is based off of that self-identification. Well, not self-identification, but off that identification. And it becomes a core part of who you are. But I try to teach that's not really who you are.
Right.
It's an aspect of you. It's a piece of you that will be yours forever. But it is not the thing that makes up who you are.
Yeah, it's not a defining characteristic of that person. You know,
exactly.
You could be any number of things, but it doesn't have to be that is your identity, you know?
Mm-hmm. And a part of that is during my time for higher education. And then when I was working in the mayor's office, I did a lot of stuff with veterans. The common refrain that I heard from many veterans was, "Well, I don't want a handout." And it was a constant struggle to remind them, listen, you signed a contract. Part of that contract came with these guarantees.
Sure.
That if you needed this help, this was available to you. If you wanted to go to school, that was available for you. If you needed a home loan, that's available. So I try to encourage veterans, if you're eligible for something and you need it, take it. Right. You sign that contract. It's like the same thing if you went to work for a Fortune 500 company, you sign the contract stating, you know, I'll work for you. And they tell you, you get healthcare, you get, you know, dental, eye, vision. It's the same concept.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think a lot of vets get trapped into that mindset where, you know, they end up having detrimental things happen because they don't want to be seen or feel like they're taking more than their share. And it's just, if there's one thing any veteran who is watching this can take away from me talking, is to use your benefits. Otherwise, you don't know how long they're going to be around for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even things like disability benefits. I hear from people from time to time that, I'm not applying for disability, you know, even though they have something that's service connected and it's very obviously service connected, injury or, you know, mental health condition or something like that. And I'm not applying for it. And the mindset is, because there's always somebody worse than me and they deserve it more than me. But it's not, because you're applying for these benefits and even getting these benefits, you're not taking away from somebody else. You're getting in addition to that somebody else, right? So that person who, you know, lost a leg is still getting their benefits. It's not like you're taking away their benefits because you applied for, you know, your PTSD or something like that. Like you're both getting the benefits. And like you said, it was a great example, actually, when you applied for, you know, work at any other company, they're going to give you certain benefits, you know, your healthcare, your dental, vision, you know, maybe your retirement plan. And, you know, all these things are part of the deal of your compensation when you work there. Now, some of the stuff, maybe you're lucky and you don't need any of the healthcare that year, but you still get it. It doesn't mean that, next year I'm just not going to get the health insurance because I didn't use it at all this year. You're still going to use it, right? Take it and use it. But,
you don't know. Like, I'm not saying to veterans, go and apply for all these things, right? But we know, like, Vietnam vets that came before us, it took years for Agent Orange to get, recognized. And now with us, with the burn pits, it took years for that to get recognized. And you don't know. Like, we have people who are part of our organization that, they were fine. And then all of a sudden, they've got like four different types of cancer.
Yeah.
Which all can be traced back to the burn pits. And if they hadn't had other things going on with them, who knows if they would have been able to get taken care of.
Right. And the other thing too is the kind of the group effect that takes place when the VA, if the VA sees one veteran who has a certain type of cancer that could be linked to the burn pits, and it's just the one veteran, they're going to think, okay, well, maybe that's just an anomaly and it's not really related to anything. But when they start seeing tons and tons of people coming in with the same types of cancers, obviously there's various types, but when they're seeing an increase in all these different types of cancers coming in, and they all happen to be, in their, 30s, 40s, whatever, and, GWAT era, where it's clear that they were exposed to burn pits, because most of these bases that we were deployed to had burn pits, and now you can start to say, okay, well, maybe there's some correlation here between all of this, because there's a ton of these people, had more Vietnam era vets, came forward a little bit more earlier. Maybe they would have sped up the process of making that connection to Agent Orange and the issues that they were having. Fortunately, we got the burn pit bill passed, the PACT Act that is now recognizing these cancers for the burn pits, but and also the Agent Orange, but way overdue for the Vietnam guys.
And I mean, there's, again, more politics involved in that. I won't get into it because, you know, Arjun Smith will come out.
Yeah, sure. I'm sure we can go down.
But that's not what we're here for.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So bring that full circle to, you know, kind of what you're doing now with Warrior Strong. You know, there's guys and gals, they're sitting at home, letting themselves go as far as their physical health, and which has a tie to their mental health as well. And they're not getting out. They're not exercising. They're not interacting with other people. They're not doing the things that, you know, you need to do in order to, you know, keep that mental and physical health strong. And so now what you're doing with Warrior Strong is now helping those folks, and, you know, probably yourself as well, you know, getting out there and kind of forcing yourself to be in front of these people and, you know, going to a class, doing the yoga and the other, you know, types of, you know, fitness stuff that you guys offer. There's all sorts of things now that you guys are doing that are helping people, but they need to reach out and they need to realize that there is support out there. There's organizations like Warrior Strong that can absolutely help them with some of this stuff. Get your ass off the couch and get into a, you know, program.
Yeah.
That type of thing is, you know, super important. So, you know, tell us a little bit more about the program and kind of like what you guys do, just for the listeners who maybe aren't super familiar with it, you know, at this point. I know we talked about it in a few other episodes, but, you know, some people maybe miss those episodes. Just tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the nice things about some of the stuff that we do is if you are the type of person that doesn't want to get off your couch, we have classes for that. Yeah. And I don't mean like fitness and yoga. I'm talking like we have meditation and breathwork classes. So, I mean, if you have your own pathway to fitness and you just really want some like camaraderie and, you know, maybe some ways to de-stress, we have that. Right now we are running, on top of all the VA stuff that we do, I think we're running about 18 classes a week. We have a Monday, Wednesday, Friday morning HIIT class, high intensity interval training class. And then we have yoga classes Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. Tuesday, Thursday morning, we have meditation, breathwork. Monday night, we have meditation. Tuesday night, we have meditation. Wednesday, we have meditation. And soon in September, we're going to be offering a new program. I don't know if Tom wants me to talk about it just yet, but it'll be Friday nights. And it's a sponsorship it's like the first one that we've got. Well, not first, because we partner with like the Fisher House Foundation and a couple of other veterans organizations. But this is like the first one that is specific to the fitness aspect of it.
Okay, awesome.
And the great thing is like, even though we're based in Scranton, Pennsylvania, you can take our classes anywhere. We do any of the in-person classes that we teach, they're also taught online. And all of the other stuff, like the meditation and the breath work, those are all online. And we do it through Zoom. So you can be anywhere. We have veterans that take HIIT classes from California in the morning with us. And we have veterans that do meditation at night with us from Texas. And it's a great thing because you're going to be able to interact with veterans in the comfort of your own home, mm-hmm. if that's what you choose to do. And we have seen friendships spark because of that, where people will make plans to meet each other at different like racing events. Or every year we do a retreat, and this is the first year that we're actually able to fly veterans from outside of Pennsylvania in for our retreat. So we have somebody coming from California, and hopefully one other person again from Texas. I keep mentioning those two because those seem to be the, we have other states that are involved. Trust me, we have many more, but these are just the two that come to the top of my mind.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's an important point too, is the virtual aspect of it, because, you know, again, some people are, you know, they're in that isolated phase, and sometimes it's baby steps. You gotta take, you know, one step at a time, and maybe doing a virtual class is a lot easier than getting in your car and driving to a place and doing, you know, some other kind of class. You know, so doing it virtually, hey, cool. And if, you know, it's too much for you at some point, you can check out. You don't need to, you know, it's not a big deal. You don't need to stick around for the whole thing. But, you know, hopefully you do, obviously. And you get the full benefit of the class. Plus, the like you said, the camaraderie and those connections that get made, people meeting up at different events and stuff. That's a great way to start making those connections, especially if you're missing it post-military. You had your group of people that you served with, maybe deployed with, and you want to just stick with that group of people. But obviously, you guys move on and you go your separate ways, and sometimes you're in different parts of the country. You know, you gotta life goes on. You gotta find that new tribe, that new group of people. And you know, I think this is a great way because you know, if you're interested in yoga or any of these other classes that you guys are offering, you know, you at least have that interest in common. Plus, you know, being a veteran, and so you know, you have some common ground, and it makes a heck of a lot easier to start talking with somebody. You know, if you're dealing with that common ground, right?
Yeah, and one of the things that I've noticed is like, in the different aspects of working with veterans that I've had, getting veterans to talk on a one-on-one kind of thing, it's kind of hard. But getting them to talk while they're sweating their ass off, it comes a lot more naturally. Because, I mean, if you think about it, one of the first things that kind of bonded us together, it wasn't going overseas. It was being in that pit.
Yeah.
Right? Getting screamed at, having to do 1,000 pushups a day, and coming back to the barracks to talk about, oh man, that sucked. I can't believe we had to, oh, that drill sergeant, he blah, 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 blah. Oh, that private over there, he screwed everything up.
Right.
It's really the complaint sessions is where those bonds were built. And
the shared suffering.
My students, especially in my HIIT class. Exactly. Yeah. Especially in my HIIT class or my Tuesday night yoga class. My Tuesday night yoga class is a power yoga. So they'll make little snide remarks or give me side eyes because I have them doing like a ton of abs. And they're like, oh my God, can we just stop doing this? Yeah, and I'm like, no, you're here for this. This is what you signed up for.
That's awesome. Now with your background, you said, you know, when you went back to school, you got a degree in nutrition and that type of thing. Do you bring that work into the work that you're doing now, or that piece of, you know, your education and stuff? How does that fit into what you're doing now?
So we teach a monthly nutrition class, and because I'm running a bunch of different programs, traditionally that was done by one of our other members, who I think you're going to have on, Jason, at some point. And he was doing a really good job, but we're kind of switching up the format a little bit. So now I'm going to be a part of that, and it's going to be more of like a question and answer type thing. But it's more so because I'm a certified personal trainer. I tend to have conversations with people who are looking to lose weight or to eat a little bit more healthy. I decided I didn't want to have to pay to go take the same test that I took in order to graduate to be able to do nutrition, because I just paid you hundreds of thousands of dollars to get this degree. I'm not going to pay you more money to take the same test twice.
Sure.
So I can't get, like, dietetics really gets into the real nitty gritty of nutrition.
Okay.
Like it's used for health therapy to help alleviate disease symptoms or even get rid of some of them outright through nutrition. But what I can do is I can give healthy eating styles. Give you information about different types of proteins, different types of carbohydrates, and I can help you figure out a way to manage the way you eat. And plus, just having that knowledge in this area in general is helpful, because the VA reports that the three things that veterans self-identify as having the biggest issues with are loneliness, obesity, and diabetes. So I'm kind of in the perfect place where I'm supposed to be.
That's in the sweet spot
for all of this.
Exactly.
Well, and go ahead.
So, you know, I because these are such big issues, and there's so many people who are dealing with those issues that you just mentioned, something tells me that there's a reason that they're still dealing with these issues, and they're not being you know, actively solved or you know, worked on or whatever the case may be. You know, what's the, for someone maybe who hasn't been active in a while, maybe is isolating and, you know, that loneliness is a big piece in their, you know, diet, nutrition, overall health and wellness. They haven't been active in a while, maybe. They might feel a little bit hesitant to get involved. Maybe they think, hey, everybody else is probably going to be a stud superstar in these programs, and I'm going to be walking in like a, you know, slob just getting off the couch kind of thing. What would you say to kind of help them take that first step and actually get involved in some of these programs?
So my advice would be, I'm going to come from the yoga aspect of it. Stop comparing yourself to others, right? That's what's keeping you from taking that first step, right? If you're worried that you're going to go to these classes and everybody is going to be Chris Hemsworth, trust me, if you've been to a gym lately, it's very few Chris Hemsworths walking around.
Right.
but more realistically, right, there's several stages that people go through before they come to exercise, pre-contemplative, contemplative. I can go through and we can discuss all those different stages before they get into the actual exercise. But the simplest thing you can do is go for a walk. Mm. Even if it's just around your block, if it's around your neighborhood, when you get up and you start going for a walk that isn't because you have to go somewhere, like you walking at, when you're at work, or walking, you know, because you have to go get groceries or whatever. But a purposeful walk to get outside, especially if you have the opportunity, if you live close to someplace where you can get a little bit of nature, even if it's you walking past the house that has some really nice potted plants, that's the easiest, right? And for those who don't have that ability, just getting outside, get outside, first step. Go outside, get that fresh air, and then find something that you enjoy exercise-wise. I tell everybody that comes to my classes, the best exercise for you is the exercise you're going to do. Right. You can come to my HIIT class and absolutely hate it, but come to my yoga class and absolutely love that, or vice versa. You can go to yoga and absolutely hate it, but, you know, come in the morning and, you know, pick up heavy things and put them down and love that.
Yeah. Right.
But it's really just take that first step.
Yeah.
Don't let it hold you back. It might feel a little intimidating, especially if you're not sure what your goal is. But then once you take that first step, find somebody, either even if it's a friend or me, you know, and, you know, figure out what exercises you're going to do or what you enjoy doing exercise wise. One of the other things that we do in our program is we provide a certification program. So if you do enjoy something, you can then become the expert in it. And we'll take that responsibility on to get you certified in that. So that way you can become a personal trainer, a running coach, a yoga instructor, breathwork or meditation. And that way you can then take your passion to other veterans and then help out your fellow brothers and sisters.
Yeah. And that's great because it's that ripple effect that, you know, you helped yourself by starting and, like you said, just take that walk or take that next step and always just do that next thing. And then, you know, eventually you get to that point where maybe you decide, hey, I want to do this for, you know, a career, you know, a job or whatever. And you get that certification. Now you're helping other people and you're looking at those people who are maybe in the same place that you were just a short time prior. And it's like, hey, I know where you were. I know what it feels like to be in your shoes. I'm here to help. And those are the people I think will make the biggest impact. And so that's awesome that you guys offer that certification or that path to certification, you know? So I think.
And we've seen.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, we've seen it change people's lives. We had a veteran that had a similar story. He was homeless. He started participating in our program. Well, now he's one of our community's favorite meditation instructors. So it's, you know, it's again, coming back to that non-attachment, you know, don't have attachment to your expected outcomes, because you're going to be surprised when you learn to let go of preconceived ideas and fears and take that first step. Things change, and it will surprise you, anybody, mm-hmm. how quickly your life changes just by taking that first step.
Yeah, someone was asking me a little while ago, they wanted to start a podcast, and they asked me for, you know, some advice and things like that. And I know this is different than what we're talking about with fitness, but I'll get there. Give me a second to circle back to it. But they were asking me all these questions, you know, what kind of microphone, what kind of, you know, cameras, and what kind of software to record, and all the technical details. And like, and then they're like, okay, what's like the number one piece of advice that you'd give somebody to, you know, before starting a podcast? And I said, well, just start. Like that's the best thing that you could do, mm-hmm. is just start. Look, I don't care if you have the best equipment in the world. The first few episodes are probably not going to be your best episodes ever. You know, you got to learn along the way.
Yeah,
you got to do things and make a mistake here and there, and maybe realize, mm-hmm. hey, that wasn't the best way to do things, and then you learn and you grow and you get better. But I know that conversation happened to be about starting a podcast, but it's really true for just about anything, including your physical fitness, your mental health, your, you know, whatever it is. Take that first step, whatever it is, and just do it. You know, this is not a promotion for Nike or anything, but yeah, just do it, you know?
Yeah, it's 100% correct. If you have an idea and you sit around and you wait for somebody else to have that same idea, you're going to miss out.
Yep.
If you have the idea, take it, run with it. You might fail. Mm-hmm. So what? You fail, right? Then you learn from that failure, and then you can take those lessons that you learned through failing to improve. And that's really, I mean, when you think about any type of anything, right? Any endeavor that you take on, whether it be education, mental health, or fitness, you're going to fail at some things, and that's okay. Failure is how we learn. It's how we adapt, and it's how we change the way we do things in order to have that positive outcome that we're looking for.
Yeah. And we're so like adverse to failure, I think, in our society and our culture and everything. Mm-hmm. Like we don't want failure. Like that feels terrible. And I think part of it is social media, where you see everyone's A game all the time, and then you're a little self-conscious because you go to try this thing and it doesn't quite work out, and it's like, oh my God, everyone's gonna see me not doing it 100% and perfectly or whatever. And that who cares? Like that person who posted the thing on social media, mm-hmm. they didn't do it perfectly the first time they did it either. And like, just be okay with not being 100% is, I know it's hard. I have the same problem myself. Like I struggle with that too, but it gotta constantly remind myself, it's okay that it's not 100% perfect and 100% accurate and 100% whatever. You gotta let go sometimes and just be okay with not being the best or with failure. You know, think about anything that you did growing up as a kid, riding a bike. I'm pretty sure anybody who got on a bike for the very first time didn't just start pedaling and was like, oh wow, this is easy. You know, they probably fell. They probably scraped their knee. They probably, you know, cried a little bit too. And, you know, but eventually they figured it out. Yeah. And I remember teaching my kids how to ride a bike and the excitement on their faces when they finally got it. Oh my gosh, it was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but they wouldn't have had that excitement had it not been for the failures, the scraped knees, the falling off and the struggle that they went through. They wouldn't have been as excited. They'd just been like, oh, cool. This is just a thing I could do now. Like I didn't realize I could do it, but now I can. Cool. But with the failure, they realized, hey, I got to put some work in. And now that I did, and now it's working, I'm super stoked that this is actually working, you know?
Yeah.
But the same thing with anything, you know?
Oh, yeah. Like 2 years ago, me and my wife were going through a little bit of a rough patch. We weren't married yet. And I needed something to keep my mind off of everything that was going on. And I picked up a couple of free pallets. I'm like, I'm going to become a carpenter, world class. And all the stuff we had for the backyard were like those folding Walmart chairs that you get for like sporting events. Yeah. And I was like, well, we really need some new furniture. So I took these pallets. I mean, outside of the stuff they learned in the Army, which was not building furniture. It was knocking things down. And the first couple of chairs that I made were garbage. Yep. They lasted for a season and later became part of the fires that we had at night, sitting at the little campfire. But that experience, those failures, taught me, okay, I can't touch this piece this way. It also led me into like looking up how to do things better and realizing that, yeah, these might have looked like garbage. They worked. We had people had things to sit on. But that sense of just doing that, making those pieces of furniture at that time, I felt really accomplished because I was like, my friends have a place to sit and we can all hang out together around the fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just, like you said, just do it.
Exactly.
Go for it.
Yeah. And figure things out. Part of the fun of, I guess, of life is figuring things out and seeing what you're capable of. And, you know, you won't ever know if you don't try, right? You're capable of a ton of stuff that you probably haven't even tried yet and you don't even know. So this has been, I think this has been a great conversation, you know, hearing a little bit about your background and, you know, the transformations that took place along the way. I think that's a key component of your story is all these different changes that took place, changes in mindset, changes in locations, changes in things that you were doing with your life and everything, just a lot of changes. You know, if you look back at, you know, 25 plus years ago or whatever it was, you know, at that time point, when you first joined the military, you probably wouldn't have expected that all of these things would have happened along the way, but by being open to these changes that you allowed them to happen and, you know, look at where you are now and you're out there, you're helping other folks and you're doing a lot of great stuff. So before we wrap up though,
I honestly didn't think I was going to make it to the age of 25. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Especially realizing, you know, in basic training that you're doing a lot more than what you originally thought you'd be doing. You're going to be asked to do a lot more.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a lot. Before we wrap up though, for folks who are interested in finding out a little bit about Warrior Strong, you know, where they can go to support, you know, either financially or get involved themselves as far as, you know, some of the programs, where can they go to find more information and find out more about the programs?
Yeah. Well, if you're in the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre area, you can come to 311 Adams Avenue in downtown Scranton. We have a studio. You can't miss it. It says Warrior Strong right on the window. Come down, talk to me. If you're not in the area and you're, you know, one of the far-flung places around the globe, you can find us at warriorstrongeep.com. You can come to our website. You can email me at chris@warriorstrongeep.org. And you can find us on, both the Apple and Android app stores. We have an app. It's 100% free. It will give you connections and the ability to RSVP to our classes. It also has some pre-recorded classes on there. So if you liked what we were talking about here today, but you're still not sure, you're in that pre-contemplative stage, go to the website, check it out, download the app, see the videos that we have. Do a couple of the online classes and then join us for the classes that you enjoy.
Sure. Yeah. And that's a great way to do it too, because you can kind of do it at your own pace and see what you like, what you maybe don't like. And before you just kind of dive in and get involved with a class, you can start doing things that way. And I think that's an awesome thing too. One correction. I just want to make sure for the listeners, I think the website is .com or .org.
.org. Okay. My apologies.
Okay. That's fine.
I'm just so used to .com.
Yeah,
so.
No, I know. I a lot of people are. I just want to make that clarification there. But for the listeners, that link's going to be in the show notes anyway, so you don't have to worry too much about that. Just click away and you'll find the link. But man, Chris, this has been a great conversation. I really do appreciate not only all the work that you're doing, but I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing, you know, your background, your story, and, you know, everything that you do.
Well, thank you. And thank you again for having us on and supporting us. I know you've done a couple of other episodes looked forward to hearing them when they come out. And like I mentioned, I know this one, you said, isn't going to come out till September, but we have a new program that we're going to be starting in September. So check that out. Yeah. It's really exciting. It's, and if you're still contemplating, check us out. Go for a walk.
Sure.
Take a couple deep breaths. Let the eyes fall heavy. And just be in the moment.
Great advice. And yeah, we'll have those links and people can check it out there. So thanks again, Chris. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.